Hey, what are you doing out here in the storm?
Please don't say that someone told me to go fly a kite.
Hey, I know you. You're Benjamin Franklin. What's with the kite?
I'm trying to harness electricity.
Hey, Mr. Franklin, you know, you succeeded. We even have electric cars now.
That sounds like a very bad idea.
You know, if it wasn't for you, many of us couldn't read. You invented the bifocal.
I guess you could say I made a spectacle of myself.
Hey, did you know that you're featured on our $100 bill?
It's a horrible likeness. Now, there's some men I'd like you to meet. You know, John Adams, James Madison. You've heard of them, correct?
Of course I've heard of them. Of course I've heard of them. Honey, wake up. I just met Benjamin Franklin.
I told you not to eat that kitchen sink pizza before you went to bed.
We owe a lot to Benjamin Franklin. Consider Perfection Auto Works for all your electrical automotive repair needs. From a check engine light to a smoked electrical harness. Call 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Essential pest control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
This is Ebb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Ebb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911. Welcome back to Inside Track. Frank's here. Ebb's here. Bruce is still on vacation. And we're here live in the Bustos Media Juggernaut in Tucson, Arizona on a beautiful Sunday afternoon. I'm your host, Ebb Wilkinson. Saturday afternoon. I swear to God, I'm losing my brain. I'm Ebb Wilkinson along with Frank Antinori. Thanks for joining us. We've got a great guest coming up. Please stay with us for the entire hour. This show is made possible and brought to you by our friends at Perfection Auto Works, Wilkinson Wealth Management, Tucson Iron Metal Retail, and Essential Pest. We are very pleased to welcome our very special guest for the hour, John Sigler. John is the past president of the National Rifle Association, which he's called the most mainstream group in American culture today from 2007 to 2009. After leaving the NRA, Sigler became chairman of the Republican State Committee of Delaware. In his prior life, he was a law enforcement officer, police captain, in Dover, Delaware, and also in the United States Navy. John, welcome to Inside Track.
Hi, Ev. Thank you for having me. And one correction. I was not a captain in the Navy. I was enlisted
captain
in the Navy.
No, you're captain in the police force, weren't you?
Yes. Now we're right. You know, that brain that you said that you were lost a minute ago, did you look under your chair?
And it's right there. John, how's everything going?
Everything is fine. It's a beautiful day. Nice fall day here on the East Coast in Dover, Delaware, and I spent most of the day along with my wife Ingrid down at Bridgeville Rifle and Pistol Club for a family day at the range.
Nice. Hey, talk about the founding of the NRA. How did it started? When?
Okay. 1871 is when. How is a bit of a convoluted story. Will remember, that during that time, in 1871, the President of the United States was Ulysses S. Grant. Obviously, he was the same Ulysses S. Grant who helped win the Civil War for the North. Several of his people that he trusted quite a bit, one of them being William Church, and the other being General George Wingate, were very interested in firearms and shooting, and they were also interested in something that the president was interested in, and that is the fact that during the Civil War, the country boys from the South knew how to shoot, and most of the people that they had drafted into the Union Army did not. Remember that they actually were taking immigrants right off the ships in New York City and sending them into the Army and sending them into battle very quickly thereafter. Most of them had never even handled a firearm. The concern was that we were in, we being the country, were in the middle of trying to get ourselves out of what the previous president, President Johnson, had gotten us into with the Reconstruction after the war, and it was not going well. And there was some fear that there might be a flare-up of the Civil War as a result of how Reconstruction was going. Grant was trying to correct some of what Johnson had done. Johnson was extremely corrupt, and they were trying to get out of that. But they were very fearful that if there was another Civil War, Americans would not be able to answer the call should they be required to come to the aid of their country. For that reason, the National Rifle Association was born for the purpose of training civilians in the use of military arms in case they had to defend their country. And that was in 1871. And you'll notice, if you look at your history of the NRA, you'll find that the first president was General Ambrose Burnside. And you'll see other names on the list of early presidents that you'll recognize. Winfield Hancock, Ulysses S. Grant after he left office, General Phil Sheridan, General Wingate, and many others. Fast forward, if you will, a little bit, in fact, quite a bit, up into the 20th century. And during those intervening years, the National Rifle Association had built up its membership and was engaged in competitions primarily, as well as training and safety. One of the things that Burnside and Wingate and Grant understood was that the best way to get people interested in marksmanship was to challenge them through competition, and that's the American spirit. So they tapped that American spirit. Moving on, in 1974.
Where were the first competitions?
The first competitions were in Creedmoor, New York, the first international competition was also at Creedmoor. The Irish had just won a big shooting competition in Europe, and they came over to the United States, and they challenged the United States to what we now think of as the Creedmoor Cup matches. And until that time, the United States marksmen were not adept at, nor had they participated in, what we now think of as long-range competition. That's what they were doing in Europe, and that's what the challenge was for. So that took place, believe it was 1877, and went on until into the early 1900s when the Irish lost many of their rights due to the fact that they had rebelled against the English. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, wow.
So those were the first long-range and international competitions. We beat the Irish here in the United States. 4 years later, we went to Ireland and beat them in Ireland. And then it went back and forth until, I believe, 1911, but don't quote me on the date.
So we have all this taking place, and then I understand that when was there some uprising with the New York forcing the NRA out of there to find a new home for its range? It was like 1892.
I believe you're correct with that. I'm going to have to rely upon your understanding of history. Mine may not be as clear on that issue.
So,
but eventually we ended up at Camp Perry.
Okay.
And Camp Perry was our home, along with what then was known as the Division of Civilian Marksmanship within the United States Army. Between the NRA and the United States Army, the national matches were held on Camp Perry for many years, over 100 years, actually. And it was my pleasure to both shoot in those matches and be a referee during those matches. Camp Perry holds a warm place in my heart.
Yeah, John, Frank Antonori here. I did 20 years in the Army, and one of the most prestigious things that you could do in the Army was obtain the President's 100 tab that you would wear over your unit patch. And that's through Camp Perry, and that had the esteemed sort of, and it's very rare. There's not a lot of guys that were able to get that President's 100 patch. And that went back to before we had Secret Service. The top 100 marksmen in the Army were the guys that used to protect the President. So that's where the President's 100 came from. But it's
not know that.
It's still in effect today, and it's a very esteemed to go to Camp Perry. To win that competition and be in that top 100 to get that President's 100 tab is just something that I wish I could have gotten. I couldn't get it, but I wasn't good enough of a shot. You got to be a pretty darn good shot with a service rifle to get that patch.
Well, I shot service rifle for a while, and I can tell you I came nowhere near it.
Yeah.
Nowhere near it.
So I had interrupted you. You were going up to the 1970s of NRA history.
Yes, I was, and I apologize if I was trying to get there too quickly for you. 1974 saw the creation of something called the Special Contribution Fund, which created what we now know of as the Whittington Center in Raton, New Mexico. The Special Contribution Fund is a 501c3 within the NRA. And the purpose of the Whittington Center is education and training, right back to where we started with President Grant and Ambrose Burnside and company. If you've never been to the Whittington Center, it is a great facility. It is, I think, 33,000 acres. Outside of Raton, New Mexico, and it has any kind of range that you want, from long range rifle to pistol to small bore to trap and skeet, they run all kinds of educational programs out there. They have something called an adventure camp during the summer for kids, and it's almost like a fun boot camp, if you will. My
nice.
Boot camp wasn't fun. Their boot camp is, but the kids learn not just to shoot, but they also learn all about nature obviously the outdoors of the Southwest, responsibility, a little bit of independence. Hopefully they grow up during that time just a little bit. At least that's the hope of their parents when they send them there.
Do they have to be NRA members?
The reports that we get back from the parents is that we're pretty successful doing that.
Do they have to be NRA members to go there?
No, they do not. Absolutely not. It's open to, I say it's open to the public. You have to apply, and it's not free. But it is subsidized, heavily subsidized by gifts and grants.
Tell me about other NRA shooting programs, because the NRA is known for training and education. How many programs or things like that are there out there for the NRA?
Well, general operations overall, everything it does, just for clarity purposes, there are two sides to NRA. There's the political side, which is the Institute for Legislative Action, which was founded in 1975, I believe it was. That's the political side. The training side and the side where competitions are done, known as general operations. I'm not sure the number of programs now, but I believe it's very close to what it was when I was president, which is 180 separate programs.
Wow.
In general operations, 180 separate programs. That's what really makes NRA different from a lot of other pro-Second Amendment organizations. We do it all. We don't just do politics. We don't just do court cases. Yeah, we do those things, But we also do a lot of training. We do a lot of education. And we do a lot of things having to do with conservation, hunter safety programs, all kinds of things for youth and women. NRA does it all. If it has to do with the Second Amendment, if it has to do with firearms, it has to do with hunting, it has to do with training, NRA does it.
So I know
and
that
does it very well.
Yeah, I know that I'm a NRA certified firearms instructor, and I just received something in the mail the other day talking about that there's over 125,000 certified firearms instructors through the NRA.
Well, that's part of my history as well. When I was a police officer, one of my jobs was as a firearms instructor for the police department. And that's where I got my initial certification, was with the NRA at Camp Perry, by the way, in 1977, I believe. It's either 76 or 77. But it was at Camp Perry. It was NRA certification. And that NRA certification as a police firearms instructor went a long, long way. Lessons that I learned at the very beginning, a lot of other training courses tried to teach, but NRA taught it best. I took a lot of different courses during the period that I was a police firearms instructor from a lot of different organizations, and NRA's police training is number one. They train the trainers. They're not training the shooters. They're training the trainers, and they do an outstanding job, and they do a better job today probably than back when I took the course.
So when did the NRA start to become political?
Well, that's a tough question, because it had dabbled very, very delicately around the time of the 1934 Act, again in the 1968 Act. It was after the 1968 Act that NRA really started looking at what it is it needed to do to protect the right to keep and bear arms. If we're going to do the things that General Grant, President Grant, General Burnside, Hancock, and the rest of them wanted us to do, we needed to protect the right of the civilians to own and use firearms legally and for lawful purposes.
So go back to General Grant and Burnside for the moment. These firearms, basically, they were the proverbial weapons of war that the Democrats are screaming about, correct?
Sure. When you think about it, the assault weapon of the day was probably a smoothbore. And then the thing that turned the tide in many battles was the introduction of the rifle. Verdun's sharpshooters, for instance, had rifles as opposed to the smoothbore. So they would be quote the assault weapons of the day, because they were the weapons that were being used by the military to actually assault. Now that gets us to the issue of today. What's an assault weapon? And it is not, by any definition, what the left, and for many cases that means the Democrats, are calling an assault weapon. Your semi-automatic AR-15 is not an assault weapon. It has never been issued to a military formation that was going into combat in the history of the United States. Never. It's not the M16. It's an AR-15 and or an AR platform. They're all semi-automatic. They are not assault weapons, and they are not weapons of war. It's that simple. It's one of those inconvenient facts that people like our current presidential candidate, Ms. Harris, just can't get right. And Joe Biden, who comes from my home state, unfortunately, has never gotten it right. It's one of these things where if you're going to tell a lie, tell it enough, and it becomes the truth, I suppose. But that semi-automatic firearm that we think of as America's rifle, the AR-15, is not an assault weapon and never has been.
Yeah, and they are used for hunting.
used for hunting, used for competition, used for home defense, military, sometimes uses them for training, but that's all. Police departments use them very much as patrol rifles in their cars.
So let's go back to the ILA for a minute. Why was it created?
It was created basically to separate the what NRA was doing, those 180 programs that we're talking about. There probably weren't 180 when ILA was begun. But it was to separate the focus, to keep the training stuff on one, training and competition on one side, and to do the political things on the other side. And the political things necessary were to defend the Second Amendment from the political attacks that were underway at the time. It began in earnest with the 1968 Gun Control Act. If you'll remember, just prior to that, in 63, President Kennedy, who, by the way, was a life member of the NRA, was assassinated with a rifle that allegedly had been transported in the mail. And then, of course, we had Bobby Kennedy being assassinated and Martin Luther King being assassinated, and that led to the passage of the 1968 Gun Control Act.
John, we've got a caller. Let me interrupt for a second. Len, go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And John, thanks for your service, and thank you for the work put in to the NRA on behalf of all its members. I am a member, I'm a life member, and I was wondering if it would be okay to shift gears just a little bit. I'd like to know a little bit more about what your current involvement with the NRA is and what your aspirations are for the future. And I do have a couple follow-up questions as well.
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Lynn, and thank you for being a devoted member, and thank you for your compliment. My participation right now, I am not currently on the board. I am a member of what they call the Executive Council. Tongue-in-cheek, the directors refer to us as the Old Goat Club. We're the most of us are past presidents who sit on the back row, and we have voice but no vote. I do serve on several committees, and I'm very, very active here in the state of Delaware. I'm a semi-retired attorney, and I write a lot of legislation when I no longer lobby. I did that for 30 years. We now have somebody who's much better than I ever was lobbying, but I'm available by phone literally minute by minute as they're on the floor. They need amendments, and they'll call me, and I'll hammer out an amendment and email it to them. For the future of NRA, we have, hopefully we're about to get out from under the attack by the New York Attorney General. You know, she tried very desperate. In fact, she ran on the platform of putting the NRA out of business, and it looks like we've got a ruling from the judge that says, no, we're not going to put the NRA out of business. She tried then to have a monitor appointed, and that seems to be off the table as well. The judge has ruled against that. So hopefully we're nearing the end of that litigation. I'm glad you asked the question about what my goals and objectives are. I refer to them as the seven R's: reform, recover, repair, revive, replace, rebuild, and restore. And Len, if you'll let me, I'd like to explain them.
Sure, go ahead.
Reform. Hey, John, before we do that and go down there, we've got to go to the bottom of the hour break, or our advertisers are going to be ticked. So let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we return, we've got John, we've got Len, we've got Frank, we've got Eb, Tom's running the booth, and Bruce is still on vacation. We'll be right back.
Essential pest control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
Excuse me, where are your quick fix, do-it-yourself cans of Freon for your car?
Aisle 7.
Let's see. The cheapest one is $29.95. Man, $49.95. I'll go with the $29.95. Hey, who are you?
I'm your Perfection Auto Works guardian angel.
And what brings you here?
My wings. What do you mean, what brings me here? I'm here to save you from making a terrible mistake.
That seems a little funny.
What? Funny? Like a clown? Do I amuse you? You have no idea what you're doing. Check out the warnings on this can. It can blow you to bits. It's under pressure. You know how many people have joined me after trying to do it themselves?
So what do I do?
Well, get over to Perfection Auto Works for the $49.95 AC tune-up. I gotta go. Some guy's on a bridge.
Listen to the Perfection Auto Works Guardian Angel. Take advantage of our $49.95 AC tune-up special. 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Yeah, funny like a clown, huh?
Customers come first at Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus.
My main goal is to make everything easy for the customer, whether every decision I make in terms of business is, will this make sense for the customer, and is this make it easier for the customer to come and look at material, how the yard is organized, what material we cover, what material we offer, anything like that.
Tucson Iron and Metal Surplus. Call 209-1579. Stop by the yard, 701 East 36th Street. Open Monday through Saturday.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. Some advisors say they do everything. Take that with a grain of salt. In fact, take it with a whole salt mine. We specialize in guiding you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. We refer you to other services so that we have no conflicts of interest. Reach us at 777-1911. That's 777-1911 or WilkinsonWealthMGMT.com. Welcome back to Inside Track. Frank's here, Eb's here. Bruce is on vacation, and hopefully we still have John and Len. And John, you were getting ready to talk about your 7 points?
Yes. My 7 points, if Len will let me go there, sure. Reform, recover, repair, revive, replace, rebuild, and restore. And by the way, that is my – I have decided to – come out of retirement, if you will, and run for board again. So this is really my platform. Reform, modernize, and streamline NRA's business model and business operations. The way we have run NRA over the years has to change. And COVID has taught us that we don't necessarily have to be all in one building. And there are other ways of being organized and other ways of doing business. We also need to strengthen the bylaws to clarify the board's control and authority.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I guess to be perfectly candid, one of the reasons that we're in a situation that we're in right now, by the way, we're not where we should be or where we have been in the past. One of the reasons we got there is because there was some misunderstanding, if you will, as to what the board should be doing versus what staff should be doing. And don't get me wrong, we've got great staff, and we've got a new EVP, and Executive Vice President. I tend to talk too fast and get my tongue wrapped around my eye tooth and can't see what I'm saying. We have a new EVP, and he's all for rebuilding and doing all the things that I'm about to talk about and that I've already talked about. But I think we need to make sure that the board understands what it's supposed to be doing and that staff understands what they're supposed to be doing. Recover is the next R. Recover financially, organizationally, legally, and politically from the damage done over the past 10 years. And recover the money owed to the NRA by former executives, the state of New York, and perhaps some others. Repair the damage done to NRA's image and relationship with its members, our clubs, our donors in the industry, Congress, and the public at large. Revive the dormant and semi-dormant programs that our members want and need. And that's those 180 programs that we were talking about in general operations, many of which got pushed to the side due to COVID. All of our programs require interaction between individuals. And during COVID, that interaction was either curtailed or totally ended. And because of that, our programs, some of them actually languished and withered on the vine. And it is time to give them a new shot in the arm and get them going again. We need to replace the employees that we lost during COVID. And we need to replace the programs that were abandoned over the past 10 years while we fought this, first of all, COVID and then the lawsuit. We need to rebuild. We need to rebuild NRA ILA. It's good, it's strong, but it can be a whole lot better, and it has been better in the past. And by God, it's going to be better in the future, too. We need to rebuild our membership. Some of our members have fallen by the wayside. Unfortunately, people pass on, and also, unfortunately, we have some members who are not quite sure that the NRA really represents them, and I'm here to tell you that we do. We need to rebuild general operations, and I'm repeating myself a little bit, but that includes competitions, clubs and associations, education, training, and the various NRA clubs. The clubs and our members are the backbone of the NRA. They're the people that make it work, whether it's being volunteers for ILA or being what you are, Eb, a volunteer instructor, the backbone of the NRA. Restore NRA's position as America's leader in competitions, education, training, Second Amendment advocacy in Congress and in the state legislatures and in the courts. We need to get back to where we were, and we will. I have every confidence after this last board meeting that we just got done having in Texas. I guess that was just last weekend. Seems like longer than that. I have every confidence that NRA, I think we're calling it NRA 2.0. It's not my name. Somebody else came up with that one. And I'll buy into that. NRA 2.0 is going to be bigger, better, and stronger than NRA 1.0 ever was. It's going to take us a little time to get there. And our members need to give us a little bit of room and some patience while we get there. But we need their support. We need them to come back. And I have every confidence that a year from now, we're going to be a lot stronger. 5 years from now, we'll be bigger and better than we've ever been before.
Len, you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. Actually, John, a lot of the points that you brought up, I'm delighted to hear, because I think they've been long in coming, and they have been needed. I know I have associates that, I've talked with about the things that have happened, say, in the last 5 or 10 years at the NRA. Many of them have become somewhat disappointed, even disenchanted with the way some of the things have been handled. And when I listen to all the points that you've brought up, the one question I have, which has got many parts to it, but I'm going to summarize it up by saying how. For example, you mentioned that you believe the NRA's image needs to be repaired, as well as the relationships with its members. Can you talk a little bit about what your vision is to get that accomplished?
Sure. And I'm going to get micro instead of macro, but I think the micro goes across all 180 programs. It comes down to our members. It comes down to delivering the programs that our members expect. As Ed can probably tell you, and I am very vocal about this, One of the programs that has taken it in the neck over the years is competitive shooting. I'm a competitive shooter, been a competitive shooter all my life. I came into the NRA family through the competitive shooting door, if you will. Our competitive shooters have been the backbone of ILA and of the clubs. If you go into clubs, most of NRA's clubs, not all certainly, but many of those clubs, the leaders of those clubs are competitive shooters. We need to rebuild our competitive shooting programs. We need to rebuild those clubs. And the way we do that is we reinvest in our employees and in our interest. The board passed several years ago, because I wrote the resolution, the board passed a resolution that said that the board supports competitive shooting because they understood that's our past and it is our present and it should be our future. And we have, for whatever reason, taken money out of that. It wasn't that long ago we had 22 employees in competitions. Today we have 2.5. That's wrong. Why? Because it's not providing what the members want and need. To answer your question, Len, we bring that back. We do the same thing with education and training. We give the instructors who are out in the field what they ask for. Can we do it overnight? No, of course not. What do we need to do that? We need a reinvestment, first of all, in philosophy, and second of all, in commitment, and third, we need our members to understand we're trying, but we need their help. And we need to get our donors back so that our donors, you can't run NRA. You can't even run half the programs of NRA, much less ILA, on membership dues alone. You can't do it. It can't be done. I know I used to be chairman of the finance committee back in the day when we had money. We need our donors. But in order to get our donors back, we have to make them understand that money is going to go where they want it to go. Not perhaps where it might have gone, and we didn't know it was going there until it was too late. That has stopped. The people who have done that have been removed, and we're now back on the track of giving the members what they need. But we need a little bit of time, a little bit of patience, a little bit of understanding, and a whole lot of buy-in by the members. We need for the members to come home, but we also need to make sure there's a home for them to come back to. That sounds like circular logic.
Lynn?
I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Finish your thought, please.
That may sound like circular logic, but it's not when you think about it. One feeds the other, and we're all in this together. Every single one of us are in this together. The members own the NRA. The board doesn't. The staff doesn't. The members own the NRA.
Lynn, where are you out of?
I'm out of Chicago.
What are you seeing out there with your fellow shooters?
Well, I see them, and I get the impression from talking with them that they feel a bit disenfranchised. They don't feel as, you know, John is kind of stated that he'd like to get back to. They kind of feel like the program they signed up for isn't the program they're getting, and that the organization, and this is not the fault of the organization because they were dragged into this fight, but nonetheless, there's a feeling that to a certain degree, the organization has lost the humility to a certain degree. And with that in mind, you know, I'd like to go to your very first idea, John, which was you'd like to modernize and streamline the NRA's business model. Tell me a little bit more about how you see that happening to bring that sense of humility back so that the members can feel that they truly belong to the organization they signed up for.
That's a good question, and it's some of it is still in the making, I'm afraid, and it's going to be evolving. But let me give you an example, two examples. One, I happened to be in a meeting last Friday where we were talking about bringing back the old field reps, not the FONRA dinner, not the Friends of NRA dinner salesman that we have now, but the old field reps who would go into the clubs and go to the matches and ask the members, what can I do for you, as opposed to going to the members and saying, please do this for me. That's a big part of that. Another example, for years, the competitive shooting community has been asking for something relatively simple, and that's the ability to post match results into NRA electronically without having to put a whole bunch of papers in the mail, do a whole lot of things by hand. They should be able to enter match results to their own computers and sit there and push a button and have it go to headquarters and have headquarters process it and get the things back that need to get back, such as reclassifications when that's the case, national record recognition when that's the case. Those are just a couple of little examples. Let's bring ourselves into the 21st century instead of the 20th century where we've been bogged down for the last few years. We were on our way to do that. COVID hit, the rest of this stuff happened. We need to get back to that. And I think with our new executive vice president and his background, his business background, I think we're going to see the infrastructure being put in place, the modernization of our IT systems that will allow us to communicate more effectively with our members. So the members think that they're, and understand that they are the organization, and that they're a part of something bigger and better, and something that this nation needs to defend our Second Amendment rights and, quite frankly, our constitutional heritage overall. Does that
John,
answer
may I interject something here based on your last statement?
Sure.
You're absolutely right. That needs to, a conduit, if you will, needs to be set up between the members and the organization, so that if a member has a need, whether it's for a past record, if it's for information, or whatever it is, that when they call or they write, there is a clock that starts to get them the answer back, not in 2 or 3 days or weeks, but, you know, like within, say, 24 hours. Because the problem from a, if I were to be honest with you, the problem from a member's point of view is they're like, I liken it to talking when you're up in space. The words go out and they go out and they go out further, and there's no echo back. There's no feedback. And they, as a result of that, the members feel, you know what, nobody's listening on the other end.
Len, I cannot argue with that even just a little bit. I totally agree with what you're saying, and that is one of the biggest problems that we need to solve. And part of that is the replacement of our employees. If there's nobody there to hear the call, there's nobody there to answer the email, there's nobody there to look up the answer to your question, you're not going to get an answer. We need to replace people, but they've got to be the right people, and they've got to be trained correctly. Not in the way we did things 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, but the way things are done in industry and in business now and in the future. I hear what you're saying. Remember, I'm a member too, and I get frustrated. I get angry. And if I'm getting frustrated and angry, I know that you are. And that's
well,
something.
Let me just end by saying this, John, from your lips to God's ears. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Len.
Thank you, Len.
John, you got into this through competitive shooting, and I noticed that you're a big competitive shooter, F-class. Tell me about that.
F-class, yes. F-class is fairly new to the American scene. It actually began up in Canada back in the 1980s and came up, actually, I guess, maybe in the 1990s. There was a gentleman whose last name began with F up in Canada who was getting elderly. And he showed up at the range one day, high-power shooter, what we call a Palma shooter, full-bore shooter. And his shooting companions were getting ready to shoot their match, and he showed up and said, look, I can't get into a sling anymore. My eyesight is not good enough for me to be able to shoot, see the sights anymore. What I want to do is I want to lay prone without the sling, with a front rest, maybe a bipod, and a scope so that I can see the target. Can I shoot out of competition just for the fun of shooting? And they said, sure. Well, somebody saw that. And somewhere, maybe it was the next match, the next week, I don't know. Somebody else showed up and said the same thing. Hey, can I shoot with him? Sure. Well, you now have two shooters on the line. Now you've got competition. And hence F-class. F-class is primarily long range, 800, 900, 1,000 yards. We also shoot mid-range, 300, 500, and 600. It's all slow fire. And I got into it almost by accident when the first F-class, United States F-class team was getting ready to go to the F-class World Championship in South Africa in 2004, I believe it was. They found out that they needed to have a national championship here in the United States before they were allowed to participate in the international competition. They didn't have one. And I got a call, knew nothing about it, and they asked if I could get a match sanctioned as a national championship. I got it done. At the time, I think I was either second vice president or first vice president. I think I was second vice president. And they invited me down for the first one. They provided me with a rifle. They provided me with ammunition. And I was an old pistol shooter. I laid down there. It was absolutely no wind, perfect conditions, great rifle, great ammunition. And I won the first match I ever shot in. The hook was set. All they needed to do was reel me in. Well, the rest of the story is that was the first relay in the morning. The wind came up. The next match was really ugly because I had no idea how to read wind. Long story short, I've shot in two world championships as a member of the United States F-class rifle team in open, shooting an open rifle. Shot in Canada in 2017. Our team brought back bronze medal. And then we went down to, it was supposed to be 4 years later, but COVID got in the way. It was actually turned out to be 6 years later, 2023. We went to South Africa, and the United States F-class open team won the gold. We won the world championship. The first time the South Africans had ever been beaten by anybody on their home range, and we managed to do it. And it was a team effort, a total team effort. So anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it because it happens to be the truth.
Frank, you had a question.
Yeah, John, I've been a life member myself since 94, and I used to participate a lot with Friends of the NRA. You know, over the last couple of years, it's kind of waned off. It's harder to find a lot of those dinners. There used to be at Friends of the NRA dinners all over the place you can go to, and it was, to me, a way to get people to go out and see the good things the NRA was doing with regard to firearm safety and training and Eddie Eagle and all that stuff that a lot of those people that attended those meetings went to. And then over the last couple of years, we've seen an explosion of firearms ownership in the United States, and especially amongst women, actually, too, has been a growing number. But yet, you know, it doesn't seem that we being the NRA, have grown membership commensurate to what the I guess, the gun ownership numbers are in the United States. I mean, it's a ridiculous number now. It's like 120-something million people own a firearm, at least one in the United States. And it's just always a struggle to see why the NRA doesn't have 100 million members, because all of what they are currently in possession of is thanks to an organization like the NRA that has protected that Second Amendment from those that would want to weaken it or eliminate it. And that's still going on today. We hear all the time, not a day goes by when somebody talks about getting rid of the Second Amendment. What are you guys doing? What's your strategy, your plan as a board member to get that membership number up? Because strength is numbers. Especially in the political world, strength is numbers, and we need the bodies. We need the new members. What's the strategy for getting that number up?
Well, you heard a little bit of it before in very, very general terms. We need to rebuild our clubs. Our clubs need to be. When I was president, one of the standard paragraphs in almost all of my speeches had a line that went this way. If the hand that rocks the cradle doesn't hold a firearm, the occupant of that cradle probably never will either. What I mean by that is something that you are talking about, and that is first-time gun buyers. The vast majority of them now are women. And women are hopefully getting trained. Many women are getting concealed carry permits. But are they really practicing, and are they really becoming part of our culture? And do they understand that the Second Amendment really is what protects them and allows them to protect themselves and their homes and their families? The answer to that is probably not. And one of the reasons I used to use that line was many of our clubs and many of our ranges are not female friendly. They do not, some of them, unfortunately, are still part of this scratch and spit type, where when a lady shows up with a firearm, they look down their nose at her and treat her as though she's some kind of a second-class citizen. She's not. She's a first-class citizen, the same as they are. And as soon as those clubs start understanding that, becoming more lady-friendly, and the more opportunities they provide for the women to shoot. Here in Delaware, my home club, Bridgeville Rifle and Pistol Club, has a program for well-armed women.
I hate to interrupt. We are literally 45 seconds from the top of the hour and the end of the show. I want to thank you for everything that you've done. Thanks for being on. I want to have you on again. So we've got another hour to go that we could talk about this. But thanks for joining us. Please check out our Facebook and Twitter accounts for the latest news and our views on the news. All of our Inside Track episodes are available at Apple Podcast and KVY website. Until next Saturday when we have another great show, John Sigler, thank you so much. Frank, thank you so much. This is Eb Wilkinson wishing you all a great weekend. Please join us again in 166 hours.
There she is. I see her. It's the voice of a goddess.
I'm gonna faint.
Today is today. And yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today tomorrow. Today is tomorrow. And yesterday was today yesterday. Tomorrow will be today today.
Empress has no clothes.
He's right. I see that.
You know, at Perfection Auto Works, we see things that you may not be aware of. Since 1994, we give you the honest truth when it comes to your car. Next time your car makes crazy noises, call 323-8650 and perfectionautoworks.com.
Essential pest control leaves bugs belly up with science.
You mean you don't use a shoe?
No, we use the latest in technology and innovation to eliminate bugs, termites, weeds, and more.
No spray cans and lighters?
None of that. Only solutions that target insect biology, using chemistry to help protect the environment, people, and their pets.
Huh. Essential Pest Control leaves bugs belly up. Call 886-3029 or visit EssentialPest.com.
This is Eb Wilkinson of Wilkinson Wealth Management, where we manage money for gun owners. When people turn 50, something miraculous happens. They start to get serious about retirement planning. They've done very well so far and want to be certain they power into the retirement they've earned. Let me guide you to retire comfortably and remain comfortably retired. Call me, Eb Wilkinson, at 777-1911. That's 777-1911.